first put that on. Thank you, Brother Darren, and I appreciate those very kind words this evening. As always, when we stand before those who have come to hear the word of the Lord, it is our great desire to fulfill my responsibility and to feed those of the flock who have come to see us. Now, is that visible to everybody? You see it all right? Contrast. I want to begin our presentation this evening with a few words of explanation of some of the illustrations that, and notes that will be using. They are pencil sketches that I made some 30 years ago when Velma and I were in Utah, and I was working as a civil engineer on the power plant there, and we were only just 4 or 5 miles from the Northern Ute Reservation, and we became quite friendly with those people, as we always are able to wherever we go, some of them, not always. And we had classes and talks, and especially after they found out that I was a minister of the gospel, and when they found out that I believed in the Book of Mormon, and but yet was not a part of the LDS Church, they began to really ask questions as to why and so forth. And near the end of my assignment there, they got around to asking me where our church believed they came from, who they were. And I began to put together the basics of the presentation of tonight. Unfortunately, I was transferred to the Bureau of Indian Affairs at Gallup, New Mexico, before I could get it finished, much less presented to them. And so it got set aside for a while, a good long while, by other pressing activities with the Navajo people, not only those with the government, but also with their personal lives and the ministry that I tried to present to them in terms of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And recently I've been studying the approximate time lapse between Noah's flood and the fall of the Tower of Babel, and the confounding of languages, and all of which is disputed by the great scientists of the world, because they do not believe in the gospel of Christ. They don't believe in the scriptures, period. They believe in themselves. And so our title this evening is The Origin of the Native Americans. This first slide is not pencil. This is an actual photograph my father took of this codex. I could not read the name of it. It was a dark print, or not very. But it shows the life, I suppose you would say, of Lehi, and his beginning. This is the beginning of him and his four sons and their families, and it came on around here, as you can see, one of the things that they could see from out in, as if they were in space, was that on the other side of the world, they were upside down compared to where they were in Jerusalem. We flipped this slide over, and now you can see what was right side up or upside down is now right side up. And this apparently is where they came to land in America. I don't know what the grasshopper is. I haven't researched that from the scriptures to know what this is. But this is just a lead off of what the sermon is about this evening. And these scriptures that speak of those find in the first chapter of Nephi. And I'm not going to read all of the references that I have, but you can take them down, and we'll read a few. This first one begins with the third verse of the first chapter of 1 Nephi. And it came to pass in the commencement of the first year of the reign of King of Zedekiah, king of Judah, my father Lehi, having dwelt in Jerusalem all his days, and in that same year, there came many prophets and prophecies unto the people, that they must repent, or the great city of Jerusalem must be destroyed. And we know that this is true. We want to turn now for the moment to 2 Kings and the 24th chapter and read a few verses there, beginning with the 19th verse, or the 12th verse, I mean. And Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother and his servants and his princes and his officers. And the king of Babylon took him, in the eighth year of his reign, and he carried out thence all the treasures. And I'm going to skip down here a little bit to the 15th verse. And he carried away Jehoiakim to Babylon, and the king's mother, and the king's wives, and officers, and the mighty of the land. Those carried he into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon, and all the men of might, even 7,000, and craftsmen and smiths, 1,000, and all that were strong and kept apt for war, even them the king of Babylon brought captive into Babylon. And this, well, and, I do want to go on down into this next verse, because this is where we really start. And the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, his father's brother, king in his stead, and he changed his name to Zedekiah. And Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Lebanon. And he did that, that is Zedekiah, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. And of course, we know that the children of Israel, all of them, were forbidden to marry outside of the tribes of Israel. And that was one of the things that was done here. He married out, and then he began all kinds of wickedness. And Chronicles, there in the 34th chapter, is pretty much the same. So I'm going to skip that one, and I'm going down to the third. Which is the 36th chapter. 36th chapter of Chronicles, and the 11th and 12th verse. Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God, and humbled not himself before Jehoiakim, Jeremiah, the prophet, speaking from the mouth of the Lord. And this is the marks the time that Lehi began his activities in Jerusalem. The following now is the hand sketches that I made from the Codex of Boturini, which is also called the Codex of Aztalan. Well, that Z don't last, Z don't long in there, which means the place of beginning or origin. And that's where we want to begin our talk this evening, the original facsimiles from which these sketches came was in my father's library somewhere, and I'm still not able to find them. This first one, the this center piece here, forget all the arrows because I've got a lot of handwritten, oh, I'm sorry about the mic, the handwritten notes out there that explain these things that I couldn't get off, and so I just took them the way they are. Can you hear me now? Okay. And so the main symbol here in the center, this one, is the temple in Jerusalem, represents the temple in Jerusalem and the whole of Israel in 600 BC. And the spiritual conditions that existed at the time. You'll note back there there were, let me go back there. Yeah. Okay. You note here these six, three on each side, they represent actually in this codex, temples and shrines but also more primarily the false teachings of the priests around the temple. This center right here is this emblem here. The three pronged is the brass plates, represents the brass plates of that Moses prepared, and this over here is the sword representing the authority to administer these laws. And the six symbols three on each side represent the gods forbidden to be worshipped by God, the very eternal Father of all things and peoples, which they were doing. The two symbols were, the two symbols below, I won't go back, but you may remember those down there at the bottom. One is represents the high priest, and the other is the offerings unto those gods that were forbidden. And the large symbol in the left corner, which is not part of the codex, was an enlargement by me to more clearly see the symbols that were there. And symbol on top of the temple, which was the sword and the brass plates, resting on the top of it, it represents the right, on the right side, the law of God, and on the given through Moses, the brass plates. And on the left side presents what is called in the Book of Mormon, the sword of Laban, but it preceded Laban by many generations. And it was the high priest at Lehi's time, at least this presentation was, at Lehi's time, the administration of the law. In other words, the enforcer. That's what the sword represented. This symbol is the totem of King Zedekiah, and the little symbol on the left here represents the first year of his reign in 600 BC. And you can find that in Nephi 1 and 3. And this pillar, which is also in that another part of that same codex, is the pillar, represents the pillar of fire from which Lehi saw and heard much. And in the center, right here, is the symbol of the spirit of prophecy. Sorry for the second F. Well, and that can be noted in Lehi's vision that he saw the flame and he heard much, saw much. He also saw this in that vision, the part of Lehi's vision in which he saw the tree like unto an olive tree whose branches were broken off. That's the tree, and this is the branches that are broken off. And then this is the rod of iron which you saw. And that latter part, well, when you skip down to the 68th verse, and I beheld, well, this will go back to, and I beheld an iron rod was the word of God, which led to the foundation, to the fountain of the living waters, or to the tree of life, which waters are represented, a representation of the love of God. And if I can get back there, I wanted to keep the other. Okay. Here again, you see that same symbol that was in the middle of the burning bush, or the fire, not the burning bush, the fire. And this same symbol is the spirit of prophecy or of revelation, the power of God, in other words, to speak to us. Now, this is another part of Lehi's vision. This represents, you want to go over to 1 Nephi in the second chapter, in the 48th through the 63rd. I'll just condense it here. You remember he saw the white fruit that was from the tree, and that's what this is. And then he invited his wife and his two sons, or all of his sons, all four of his sons, to come and eat. And here you see three that, sorry about that. They usually clip the clip mic on, but that's all right. I'll try to remember. And you see the three of them are eating, but there are two that have declined. This one being bigger, I assume, is Laman, the older son. And they refused, Lehi also saw it in his vision of what his father saw, only he saw it plainer than his father had explained it, at least. I don't believe that God withheld anything from his father, Lehi, but I think probably because Nephi was more determined, or at least sought the Lord for understanding of it, that he was a little more drawn to it. here we see the totem of the mic again. Thank you. I need to tie it on again. The totem of Lehi, and you notice the four branches out representing his four sons. This is again another blow up of that symbol. This time, for some reason or other, it's reversed, but it don't really matter. It's still the brass plates, the law of Moses, and the sword, which at Lehi's time was called the sword of Laban, and thereafter. And these over the top are symbols of the priesthood, which obviously Lehi was one. He was also a prophet. Here he's talking among the people. And then you see his tracks leading away. He left at the commandment. And this is, I added this in as a symbol of what we should be. These represent the tears of humility. And Christ often admonishes us to be humble in all our service and all our way of life with him. And you can check these things out in these references. Then going back to Lehi's totem with the four branches or limbs or the protruding represents his four sons. And on top of the symbol is a representative of the priesthood authority. Also are shown the footprints, and we've gone through that. Here we get into the more emphatic or more obvious portion of the first chapter of First Nephi, in which it shows Nephi is obeying the commandments of the Lord to slay Laban and to take the brass plates, that's the brass plates, and the sword, the authority to enforce the law. And here you see he's slaying. He also changed clothes with him. That helped him in his convincing of the guard of the treasury to let him in and to have the things that he needed. Here again is a representation of Lehi's prophesying to all of the, well, there were many prophets they said, and he was among them. That's, I believe, what this represents. And then, these represent the prophets that and their totems, whatever they mean. Only Lehi's is identifiable because of the tracks that he's going through and leaving Jerusalem. And so we see those here. And again, you can go to 1 Nephi 1, 59 to 65. Here is the going forth of Lehi, and of course his family would be with him to the promised land. And got the mic this time. these, I believe, and these are my interpretations, they're not from anyone else that I can recall ever seeing. But these lines represent the land, this being Asia and this being America. And as you see, here there's no footprints, but here on the land, you can see footprints again. And so he has landed here safely in this particular portion of that. I wish I had the whole codice of this particular one. I've tried to find it on Amazon and a number of other places, and I would buy it in a jiffy if I could find it in a book on it. This is the representations of the totems of the four sons of Lehi. And I don't know which one is which. In the common Hebrew way, you would start from the right to the left. And so the serpent would be Laban or Lemuel. And then I can't remember the other son, and the screen, the filter, actually there's a cross there in the center, maybe Nephi. I am not certain of that. But this is the program or presentation that I felt to prepare for my work among the Native Americans in Utah. I didn't get it in condition, and it really isn't yet in complete condition to be presented to those outside the church, perhaps. But I think it does give a good foundation to those who are seeking evidence and proof of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon, and that the Native Americans are indeed the descendants of the House of Israel. In other words, the origin of the Native Americans. And I hope to perfect this a bit more before I start traveling again, probably in late April or June. And I would also ask for your prayers. May God bless each of you.